is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the Arizona Cardinals site from the USA Today NFL Wire. And with me is Seth Cox, my co-host from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, the SB Nation sites for the Arizona Cardinals, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. And tonight, on a Tuesday night, recording like we typically would, is episode 333, but we have to talk about a gross Cardinals loss. In this episode of the show, we're basically going to talk about what happened that game. What stood out? What exactly happened against the Panthers? Because that was kind of gross. How concerned are we with the team right now and in the division? Whether we think Kyler Murray should play in Week 11 against the Seattle Seahawks. We'll talk about some of the rookie play because it seems to have declined a little bit. And then we'll look ahead to Week 11 against the Seattle Seahawks, do our preview, predict what's going to happen, and go with that. So let's start off, Seth. It's a busy time of year, but unfortunately, we have to deal with not just a sad loss, like a disappointing loss, a heartbreaking loss like we had against the Packers in Week 8. This one was just plain a stinker. It was crap the bed, bad from the start. 34-10. Granted, they go into the game, no Kyler Murray, no DeAndre Hopkins, no Chase Edmonds, no Max Garcia, no Justin Pugh, and of course, no J.J. Watt. And, you know, this was not the San Francisco 49ers game with Colt McCoy. Made everything look good on schedule, on offense, and the defense was fantastic. Everything went wrong in that game, pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, from jump, right? Like, everything went wrong. You lost the coin toss. They deferred. That's what the Cardinals like to do. And then come out, the guy you didn't resign gets a strip sack. Then they march down the field, bring in the guy that you've just never been able to beat since he was a rookie in his first start. And it was, I mean, yeah, just from there, it was all downhill. And it was just, it was the perfect recipe for disaster. It was the Cardinals' script on how they've played in certain games against certain teams. And it was, you know, it was an inevitability of a 17-game NFL season with injuries and just how the NFL is designed right now, because the Cardinals, like you said, this isn't an excuse. This is a reality. They're not healthy. You know, and you might say, well, you know, look at what they did the week before to San Francisco. Yeah, I mean, you just named three guys, and I know Chase Edmonds only played one play, but Edmonds, Pugh, and Max Garcia, three additional starters from that game out. And it just became a cascade. And let's be honest, the Panthers' defense is really good. I mean, you and I talked about this before the game.
And it was really, when we talked about what the Panthers could do to make this game interesting, it was literally exactly that. They forced turnovers. They were able to run the ball. And now, granted, we had no idea that Cam Newton was going to end up being on the Panthers to give them that juice. But I'll be honest, I think the fact that they had re-signed Newton, he gave them a little extra juice to that team. And once again, I don't know what it is, but the Cardinals just don't ever seem to come out against the Panthers with the right level of energy.
Yeah, and there's always teams like that, right? Like, there's always teams that are bad matchups. And we can say it in this division. The Cardinals are a bad matchup for the 49ers for whatever reason. When was the last time the 49ers beat the Cardinals? I can't even.
Oh, they did last year with.
Did they in their second game?
Yeah, that was that.
Oh, that's right.
but
yeah, I mean, the Cardinals, play them very well. The 49ers own the Rams.
Five straight against them.
And so it's, there are weird.
The Rams have owned the Cardinals. The Cardinals own Seattle in Seattle. It's just wacko.
Like there's weird idiosyncrasies of the NFL and games that just don't make sense. And the Panthers and the Cardinals thing goes back to Bruce Arians. I mean, it literally goes back that far. And I think, in fact, it goes back to Wisenhunt, because I don't think they beat Cam since Cam's rookie debut, where he set the NFL record.
They did beat him in 2013. So they beat his debut. They beat him in 2013. That was the Darryl Washington back game.
Okay. And so that was, I mean, that when you haven't beat a guy in that long, or a
twice
team in that long,
twice in the playoffs and three times in the regular season now, it's kind of ridiculous.
And so, yeah, I mean, it sucks. It really does. But there are those things. And look, I'm of the opinion, and I know you feel similarly, that this team is good enough to beat anybody on any given Sunday. I also feel like that they didn't have, you know, their best foot forward this week. I also feel like that they're at times look like they're just trying to get to the bye week and get a break. And that's a really difficult thing sometimes. Again, it's not an excuse. It's just reality of the situation. When you're down your best, you know, your three or your top two offensive weapons and Kyler Murray and DeAndre Hopkins, when you're down, you're starting two guards. Like it's hard. And like we said, I mean, the Panthers have the number, I think, 7 overall defense in the NFL. It's not like they're a bad defense. There's a reason that they were 4-5 coming into this game. Now you and I expected them to play similar to what they did against the 49ers. We knew it would be a little more difficult, but we expected them to play similar to what they did against the 49ers. They just didn't, because as you said, you cannot fall behind with Colt McCoy at quarterback. As good as McCoy is, as good of a game or two guy he can be, you have to be able to keep him on time, on schedule, and ahead, because he's not a guy you want to have to rely on to throw you back into a football game.
Yeah, you know, and I think one of my biggest takeaways from that is that we realized, okay, we saw the ceiling of a Colt McCoy, and then we saw what a backup quarterback looks. And the fact of the matter is, it didn't matter what happened. The Cardinals, when it comes to their offense, they're pretty unstoppable when it doesn't get sideways. And that really, I'm going to be honest, it's like that pretty much with every NFL team. I felt that they didn't attack with the run game early, because obviously it was like three screen passes to kick things off. But, you know, the sack fumble really set them back. You spot a team two scores, you're not going to come back from that pretty much, unless that team is abysmal. And while Carolina's offense has been abysmal offense for the previous three games, their defense in terms of yards, they were number two in the league coming into that game, allowing 293 yards per. And it was just the perfect storm what they did in San Francisco. And I think part of it is, I think the Cardinals operate really well when they can start the game on defense. And it's, we've seen it. They've done really well with the deferring, because one, it allows them to manage the clock at the end of the half. But two, I think that defense, it's kind of interesting how, you know, Bruce Arians was always about get the ball first. He sometimes deferred, but the Cardinals, you get that defense on the field, create a stop, get a stop early without points. Then the offense moves. You know, they get a little bit of momentum. They point points on the board, and then it steamrolls. But then it was simply this. You turn the ball over, and then that just played into Carolina's hands. It was exactly what, if they create turnovers and get a little bit of lead, then they're able to lean on Christian McCaffrey in the running game. And let's be honest, the Cardinals had no answer for the run game almost at all in the first half. And by then, it didn't matter. That was just, there was, I for as good as this team has been against the run in some games, it just made no sense. He just carved them up. There were wide open holes. He was slipping tackles. It was, but here's the thing. Every good team has had a stinker this year. It just took till week 10 for the Cardinals to have theirs. We saw the Bills score 6 points against the Jaguars and allow nine. It was a 9-6 game. We've seen Tampa Bay lose two in a row. The Rams have won two in a row. The Cowboys looked terrible against the Broncos and then looked amazing. And so every good team has laid an egg this year, and the Cardinals were exempt from that before this last week, and it was just a perfect storm. You got all those backups in. Carolina got ahead, and there was just no way to do it because Colt McCoy, he's a solid quarterback, but he's not a comeback from 17 points down quarterback.
Yeah, and I wrote about it, you know, today. Even you look at it, and you just nailed it. The Packers got steamrolled in week one, 31-3 against the New Orleans Saints, or 38-3, you know, and then they lost a close one to the Kansas City Chiefs. The Cowboys lost a close one to the Buccaneers, got steamrolled by the Denver Broncos. The Buccaneers lost, you know, a closest one to the Rams and Saints, and then get kind of embarrassed by the Washington football team. And then you talked about the Rams lose by 17 to the Cardinals, by 12 to the Titans, and then 21 to the 49ers. Like, those are literally the top five teams outside of Arizona in the NFC. Every one of them has a loss that you go, what? And let's be fair, the Bucs and Rams have two, or I don't want to take anything away from what the Cardinals did or the Titans did, but those being two score blowouts is a bit surprising. Would you not agree with that?
Yeah, it's just weird. Like, the Rams look great. Now they look like frauds, absolute frauds. It's so weird.
And this is, we don't want to devolve into a Rams podcast, but there is something to say about you know, continuity and locker room thing. And everybody wants to bring in, you know, superstars. Everybody, you know, I didn't see a huge clamoring for Odell Beckham, you know, so I was glad about that. But everybody wants to bring in stars and names. But one of the things that the Cardinals have been really careful about, and I'm going to give Steve Keim credit on this, is he's been really careful about the attitudes and the way, the emotions he's brought into his locker room, you know, and this isn't us calling anybody out or me calling anybody out, but, like, you know, I feel like they thought getting rid of Patrick Peterson was a step in the right direction for them, and they wanted to bring in, you know, guys that were physical, that were team first oriented guys, that weren't looking for glory plays. And I feel like they did that. And now, this isn't say Von Miller is that guy. I think Von Miller is a fantastic teammate. I just don't think he has much juice left. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, the dude's coming. I think he tore his Achilles last year, wasn't it?
Something like that. But, you know, yeah, pass rusher, it is hard to be an elite pass rusher for that amount of time, especially when you've had a couple injuries. He's now, you know, he was drafted the same. So this is year 10 for him. Yes. Year 11 for him.
11.
And, you know, he's played at such a high level, and a lot of his game has been predicated on his elite quickness and speed off the ball. And that goes away.
Well, it goes away. And then, yeah, it also goes away when you blow out your, you know, have lower leg injuries. It's something Jess and I talk about all the time when we talk about, you know, big guy prospects. So anyways, you know, and you look at that, and there are there are things you can say about each of those teams, right? The Packers were coming off a horrendous offseason. I mean, probably one of the worst offseasons they've ever had, with all the Aaron Rodgers situation. The Cowboys are still an iffy defense. They're a really good offense. They're still an iffy defense. The Bucs, Super Bowl hangover. I mean, you wouldn't expect it with Tom Brady, but their defense is having a Super Bowl hangover type of year. And then the Rams, you know, like I said, it might just be too many personalities. And as much as you and I like Matt Stafford, he's playing a lot like Matthew Stafford.
The Lions fans have been creeping out of the woodwork saying, oh, that's the guy we know. Interesting fact that I saw, it was and I tweeted about it, but it wasn't about Stafford because I was focused on Kyler Murray because I wanted to see where he was. Matthew Stafford has one of the highest rates of quote unquote bad throws in the league. And we saw that against the Cardinals. There were some throws you're like, what in the world? Kyler among qualified starters. So he's the only guy who's ahead of him is Andy Dalton, who's only thrown 50 passes this year. Kyler has the lowest rate of bad throws. 7.4% of his throws are considered bad throws, which is super impressive. But Matthew Stafford's was phenomenal. Way down the list.
Well, and it's phenomenal, like you said, but it's also one of those situations where it's when you're talking about a guy, and I know people will be like, well, he has 7 interceptions. Well, you know, a couple of them aren't his fault. That happens. But more than that, when you talk about a guy that's playing that well right now, that highly, it's really hard to replace him. And so, you know, one game, Colt McCoy does more than enough to win. So I don't want anybody to think I'm taking anything away from Colt. But, game two came around and couldn't do it.
No, it was he didn't look good. And it was, being off schedule, playing from behind. You can't go with the game plan. They did not establish the run like probably all of us thought they were going to do, because Carolina is a team you can run against. But I don't know. It was just – those are my takeaways. So Colt McCoy, people – Colt McCoy is a good backup, but he's not a starting quarterback. Like, he can definitely help you. And he can – if things are ideal, he's not going to F things up, basically. But if you put him behind some adversity, there's a reason why he's only been a spot starter for basically the last decade.
Yeah, and that's one of the situations. And again, not a bad backup at all. Just not a guy that's going to win you a lot of games. Like, you take Kyler off this team, are they, you know, they're probably, what, a 5-7 win team?
Yeah, probably.
And so, you know, you and obviously, if you say like, oh, yeah, put Russell Wilson. Okay, yeah, well, that's not what we're talking about. But, you know, if you take Kyler off this team, they're probably a 5-7 win team. With Kyler, they're the best team in the NFL or playing at that level. So, yeah, I mean, there's nothing, you know, I know people want to make a big deal out of this, and let's be honest. If they get to, I would say 8-4, then yeah, let's make a big deal out of it. But right now, I think that, you know, we got to see them come back healthy. They've got to be ready to go on. They've got to be ready to go on Sunday, whether it's Kyler or Colt, and they've got to make some plays finally. They've got to come back and answer the bell again before, you know, it starts to look like you said, or people are saying like, oh, it's happening again. You know, they're failing again.
Coming up on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, SR of Cardinals Talk on the web. Well, let's continue this conversation, but moving away from the game itself, what's our level of concern about this team and the division? Kind of where they stand, what we think of what's going on. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. How concerned are we about the team at this situation? Because I'll be honest, after the Cardinals game, I already had someone tweeting me, said, "Oh, here we go again." Or no, it was "the season is lost." Let's keep a little perspective. They lost their second game of the year when they were playing without their starting quarterbacks, best receiver, number one running back, and two starting guards. Oh, and their best defensive player. That was what they were up against the number two defense. So should they have won? Absolutely. Did they get embarrassed? Absolutely. The level of concern for me is very low, with except for the concern of what, like, are we going to get those players back? You get Kyler Murray back, you get the starting offensive line back, you get DeAndre Hopkins back. You know, we're back at hey, they're going to beat anyone and everyone. The problem is how long is this going to linger? Kyler's already missed two games. Is he going to miss the third? This game's a division game, but it's been very fortunate because they've lost two out of the last three games, and they actually increased their lead in the division. It's crazy because they maintained. So it's basically exactly where it was because they're a game up in the win column over the Rams, and they hold the tiebreaker. And then everyone else, it's perfect. Now, granted, they did lose temporarily their seat at the top of the NFC. But in terms of the division, which is kind of like, that's the number one priority, win to the division, in my opinion. I'm not super concerned because they're still 3-0 in the division. They get one more win somewhere. And whether that's one game against the Seahawks, which basically bumps them out of the division completely, let's be honest, they're 3-6. I don't think they can survive a seventh loss. Or whether that is picking up, even if they got swept by the Seahawks and they picked up a second win against the Rams, one more win, they've already taken care of the 49ers to the point where even if they get hot at the end of the year, you don't have to worry about them because you swept them. If you beat the Rams again, you don't have to worry about them either because you swept them. And then it's just a matter of, you know, we think that the Seahawks are in such a situation right now that I don't think they can recover from their situation right now. And then the Cardinals can put Seattle out of their misery almost this weekend. If Russell Wilson has struggles again and the Seahawks struggle, they go to 3-7. When you've got the Cardinals at 9-2, and the Seahawks at 3-7, they are known for playing better in the second half of the season. I don't think you can recover from that, though.
No, I don't think you can. And that's the thing, is this is a game kind of like what we talked about with the 49ers and Rams last week. This is a desperation game. And that desperation is going to play out in one or two ways. Either they're going to overcompensate and the Cardinals are going to be able to, you know, make plays, or the Cardinals are going to not meet them with the same type of desperation, and you're going to see a team that goes into the bye on a two-game losing streak and losing three out of their last four. And that's not to say that's going to happen. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen. But when you talk about teams that are led by, you know, a Russell Wilson and a Pete Carroll, you know, teams that have just flat out done it all the time consistently, you have to look at it and understand that how this is going to go from them. They know that they're basically playing for their season. To get to 3-7, they would have to go 6-1. I mean, they have an extra game. They would have to go 6-1 the rest of the season to even have a shot at getting the seventh wild card spot, or the seventh seed, that, you know, that wild card spot. So yeah, it just makes it one of those games. And for the Cardinals, one of the things that you can do when you take advantage of desperate teams is something what we saw happen to the Cardinals last year. You can make them force plays and make mistakes and take advantage of that. And I really do think that's what the Cardinals need to do, you know, look at on Sunday. They need to look at this as a game where they can force the Seahawks into playing desperate and potentially making mistakes. And, you know, if that happens, you don't want to say that they've locked up the division, because technically the Rams are only going to be 2.5 games behind them, because the Rams are going into their bye this week.
Yes.
But it's going to take an epic collapse on the Cardinals' part to be 4-0 in the division and 9-2 overall and not finish on top of the division. And so that's why I think this game is so important, because it all but eliminates two teams, because you've got two games on the 49ers. 49ers literally have to finish one win above you in order to win the division. And then in that case, you can split with the Rams. Obviously, you don't want to, but you can split with the Rams, and they still have to catch you. And so there's, you know, that's the thing, is the Cardinals take care of business on Sunday. It goes a long way in making the back half of the season, where you might be able to rest guys, where you might be able to look at, I mean, yeah, maybe they are playing for a one seed, and we can look at that when it comes. But as long as the Packers are above them, they're not playing for the one seed, because they can't, I mean, they can't physically catch the Packers. They have to finish ahead of the Packers. You know, a tie and you're the two seed. And, you know, right now the two seed, they play the Carolina Panthers. I'm not sure if anybody wants that.
No, we actually kind of don't. Maybe, I don't know.
I would want it. I think it would be a fun game, but yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
but Cam Newton, oh my gosh. Now, the question is now, how concerned are you about these injuries to particular Kyler and DeAndre? Because Hopkins just doesn't miss games, and now he has been completely hobbled in one and now completely absent from two. What are we looking at here? And with Kyler, are we – what's the – and we'll talk more about Murray specifically in the next bit, but are you worried about these injuries?
You know, I think I would be more worried if they would have put him on IR. But at this point, you would expect both of them to play this week, because if they don't put them on IR, then it was just a poor allotment of
right. That would make sense. You have to think that they were going to only miss one or two games, because if they were going to miss three, right?
Just put them on the three. Yeah,
just put them on IR, and it rooms remove. Now, granted, I know with at least Murray, you have that level of gamesmanship for the other team has to prepare for Kyler, but also prepare for Colt. There's games you do with that, but in terms of roster management, it just makes more sense to. Well, here's the thing, though. So here's the other part. Colt McCoy also got hurt in that game, which means we're looking at Chris Streveler. Then the report comes out from Field Yates is that the Cardinals tried to sign a quarterback off the practice squad of the Kansas City Chiefs, Shane Buechele or something like that. And, you know, they failed to do that because the Chiefs signed him to the active roster. The Cardinals were going to have four quarterbacks on their active roster, essentially. Doesn't that raise a red flag for you a little bit?
Unless they were just going to cut Streveler, which I don't know. I mean, we know that they like him, but maybe that was what their plan was. Maybe. I mean, that's the only thing I can think.
I think what the plan is, and I think it was probably to get through practice on Wednesday. Because if the plan is, if Kyler's not going to practice.
But if they sign him, he has to stay for 3 weeks?
No, he doesn't have to stay on the roster. They just have to pay him 3 weeks.
Okay.
And so they could have gone that route. And they, you know, they freed up $1.7 million of the cap space because of, you know, the Devon Kennard restructure. But my guess, if I had to guess, because the report is that if Colt needs to play, he could. And since there's a chance that Kyler could play, my guess is on Wednesday, we might not have Kyler or Colt in practice. In which case, you've only got Chris Streveler, which means that's too many reps for one guy because he's got to do his reps of offense, running the offense, and then they don't have one to run scout quarterback on defense. And so my guess is that was simply precautionary in case you have neither Kyler nor Colt on Wednesday.
But we'll see what happens
because there was on the transaction report, I thought we would see some quarterbacks trying out. There was only one tight end, so it'll be interesting to see if they have a go list, if they end up signing someone, if we see a practice squad signing or something to run scout team.
Right, and I would agree with that. Like, that's probably a good thing. I didn't read the reports. I didn't know if it was this week or last week that they tried to sign a quarterback. I honestly didn't pay attention.
Supposedly it was this week because the Chiefs just signed today to the active roster.
So then what you're saying makes way more sense.
Offensive line, it looks like the Justin Pugh and Max Garcia will be back. Hopefully we get Justin Murray back as well, and that gives you a little more breathing room on that offensive line. Not that Sean Harlow or Josh Jones played poorly. But the offense does click better when you've got, especially Justin Pugh in there. And we've seen that Max has played really, really well. He's supposedly, he guesses he's surpassed Josh Jones, at least for now, on the chart. So on the depth chart. So ultimately, if you had to go from 1 to 10 on your worry, what is your worry level for the Cardinals right now in terms of where they are at in the division, in the conference, or even some people are worried about the inevitable falling apart that happens on Cliff Kingsbury's teams?
I'm at a one right now. Until Kyler Murray goes on IR, I'm at a one. Like, that's where he's at this season. That's how well he's playing. And that's how much I, you know, think that they're in the right direction. You know, if Kyler goes on IR, I mean, it's a 10, not because I don't think that they'll make the playoffs or anything, but you lose a Super Bowl.
and then you're
I shouldn't say that. Not that they're going to win a Super Bowl, but, you know, that they have
you lose the potential of a deep playoff run. You know, Colt McCoy in the playoffs. We legitimately thought back in 2014 that if Drew Stanton had stayed healthy, that they could have made it to the Super Bowl.
This defense is not quite that good, but this offense is better than even when Carson Palmer was playing.
But then again, we had Ryan Lindley instead, and we loved Ryan. I say I have a soft spot in my heart for Ryan Lindley, and I'm going to say this till the end of time, 2014, that season, one of the biggest what-ifs, because it was wasted on Ryan Lindley in the playoffs.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm with you 100%.
Coming up next to the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Kyler Murray, should he play this week, even if he's not 100%? That's what we'll talk about next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Kyler Murray has now missed 2 games in a row. And while it's really hard to read, I will say this, it is hard to read the Cardinals on this because Cliff Kingsbury makes it nearly impossible to read into what the situation is in terms of injuries. Jay Glazer said originally 1 to 3 week injury. He was always day to day. Cliff said the first week, Kyler doesn't need to practice to be able to play, and so there was a little bit of hope he could play. Then he actually got on the practice field on Friday last week, so like, maybe he'll play. But then it was pessimistic. He just wasn't there. He wasn't ready. How healthy to you does Kyler need to be to play? And does he need to make a concerted effort, even at less than 100%, to be on the field against Seattle?
Yeah, I think I've said before, if he's over 80%, I mean, there are so many few guys operating at 100% right now. If he's at 80%, he can move. That's really the key, is if he can move, he's got to play. They need they need his energy and his leadership out there. They need his dynamic playmaking ability out there. And I get that maybe he's not, but 80% of Kyler is better than what probably we would get, what, 90%, maybe 80% of Colt McCoy.
Right, so, right, exactly. And definitely better than 100% of Chris Streveler.
Right. Oh, and I mean, that's the thing, is 75% of Kyler Murray is better than 100% of Colt McCoy. And if you're saying that Murray's at 80 to 90% and McCoy's at 80%, I'm like, Kyler, look, we got to have it. But.
Well, and here's the thing, is that we know that Kyler wants to play. That's what he doesn't want to miss. He's obviously in the players know they have to trust. They have to trust their doctors. They got to talk with that. But I know the sentiment for a lot of people, especially after the 49ers game, and we talked about this on the show last week, is, okay, just rest Kyler till after the bye for the stretch run. Cliff said it last week. He's like, you know, this is the NFL. You need to win all the games you can. And so if Kyler's well enough to play, you play him. Because, one, he's not guaranteed to be healthy later down the line. So if you can get a win now, that's a win right now is better than the possibility of a win later, in my opinion. And so obviously he has to be well enough so that he doesn't re-injure it, obviously. But if he's able to protect himself, and then he's got to be, if he's good enough to not worry about the ankle, by all means, he needs to be on the field, because, again, in this particular week especially, they can really, like we said, almost lock down the division. Almost lock down that division, because they'd be guaranteed to have no team, no one in the division will have a tiebreaker over them, and they will have already picked up a fourth division win. And so even if they have a few slips down late in the season, it's still going to be very difficult for teams to overcome them, overtake them.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why if they had been able to win last week, I think you'd play it safe. You go into the bye. He basically has an entire month off. No big deal. It didn't happen. It's unfortunate. Like, that stuff happens. It's not a big deal. But this game becomes more important, because even 8-3 is fantastic. 9-2 keeps you on pace with the Packers. That gets you, like we said, a 2.5 game lead in the division, and it just makes it to the point where you've got a really good chance to just kind of separate yourself from the pack in the division. And that's, honestly, that's the most important thing at this rate, right?
Right. And I think, if I had to guess, granted, this is not insider stuff, because here's the fact. Nobody locally has insider stuff when it comes to injuries. The Cardinals keep that locked down. That said, I think Kyler plays. I know Cliff. I think it's going to be close, and I think he was purposely downplaying, like he was, like the last 2 weeks, he kind of upplayed it. He overplayed, saying that he could do it. Now he's totally underplaying it. I think that the plan is that he will purposely keep. Maybe Kyler sits out Wednesday and is limited Thursday and Friday, but the whole goal is that he's going to play on Sunday.
And here's what I've heard. And, you know, again, this is just conversations I've had with people, is that he thought he was going to be able to play on Sunday against the Panthers. And it just, I don't know what happened. I didn't, hear anything after that. All I heard was that he thought he was going to be able to play. And it didn't happen. It is what it is at that. I mean, there's nothing else you can do, right? Like, he thought he was going to play. It didn't work out. Let's hope he gets back on the field this week. But that, to me, says that he expected to play, and either something didn't go right, or coach just made the call and said, I don't like the way it looked. We're going to go a different way. So, for me, that's that's okay. I'm really okay with that. Because at the end of the day, the coach has to protect the team and sometimes the player over themselves because they don't think about it, right?
That's true, because players are going to try and play. I mean, remember, Philip Rivers played a playoff game with a torn ACL. That's stupid. I guess, to be honest, that was dumb. And we've seen where players have gotten injuries that had they, J.J. Watt, for example, had he come out when the injury initially occurred, we're probably not looking at potentially lost for the season. That's what we run into in that situation.
Right. And so that's the thing, is I sometimes think that they're protecting Kyler from himself.
Could be. Coming next on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about the play of the rookies, because the rookies that were getting some attention early, they're not playing as much and not doing as well. So that's coming on next on Rise of C-Red. Back on the Rise of C-Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Cardinals entered the season with three of their draft picks slated to be very important contributors this season. So obviously the one with the biggest role, Marco Wilson, in the starting lineup at cornerback, playing pretty much every down. Zaven Collins, a first round pick, supposed to be a starter. He has a role on the defense in the base package. And then Rondell Moore was going to get used all over the place. He flashed early. All of their play has declined. Rondell against Green Bay made some mistakes. He had some pretty good game against San Francisco. He would have only 18 snaps of offense against the Panthers, though that might have been more related to his neck injury. Marco Wilson's play, I will say this. Marco Wilson, the one thing he's done really well is he's not really made mistakes. However, he's not really making plays right now, and he's gotten picked on a little bit. And now Zaven Collins, for the second week in a row, is not a starter, and he's even playing behind Tanner Vallejo. What do you read into what has happened with these rookies over the course of the year?
I think the more one you kind of nailed. I think they're, again, kind of trying to do as much as they can without having to put guys in a position to greater injure themselves. Collins has been interesting because it's kind of Collins and Wilson are kind of like a interesting juxtaposition of how they're handling things, because Wilson's still playing basically the entire game.
Right. He doesn't come off the field except for the only times he comes off the field, a package where they
go heavy.
Yeah.
Line.
They just don't need two cornerbacks on the field.
Right. And so it's in the, when I say the juxtaposition, it's that Wilson is not playing great and he's still playing basically the whole game. And Collins isn't playing poorly, but he's seeing a reduction in role. Now, it could be simple things like how teams that they've played the last couple weeks run their offense. And maybe that's as simple as it is. But it is a bit, I don't know, disconcerting. It's I guess, interesting. I don't really know what word to adjective to use to describe my opinion of it. Because if he was playing poorly in the games, it would make more sense. But I don't feel like he's been a liability in the snaps that he's out there.
It's really weird because what we see, like the Pro Football Focus grades, every time that he's played a limited number of snaps, he always has a high end, and he seems to flash as well. Cliff Kingsbury, I can't remember if it was Cliff or it was Vance Joseph, made a comment, it was a couple or 3 weeks ago, and I can't remember which one it was, but they said that he's making plays, but he's also making a lot of rookie plays. And I think what that is led to, especially in practice, is that he must be making more assignment errors.
Yeah. And that makes sense. I mean, that's one of those things that, you know,
part we don't see because.
Right. Well, and it's one of those things I actually talk to, like when I coach, you know, as I coach youth football, it's one of the things I talk to our players about is that, you know, reps are earned in practice. And so when you don't work harder or maybe, and I'm not saying he's not working hard, like I don't want it to come across that way, but you know, that's what I'm saying is it becomes a big deal when you're not, if you're not playing well in practice. And as unfair as it may seem, because it seems like he's doing well enough in the games. The reality is, Vance, you have to get Vance's trust. And for whatever reason, right now, he doesn't have that trust. And that's unfortunate. I mean, it is. But it's part of the growing process of players. You know, it's one of those things that I think people get too into it sometimes and they go, oh no, he's a bust. And it's like, no, he's not a bust. Like he's taking time. And you know, not to plug the original Draft Breakdown podcast show, but one of the things
plug the show. It's your show.
One of the things Justin and I have actually talked about quite a bit lately is the drafting of non-group of five or the group of five players. So players not in the Power Five conferences in the first round, they typically take an extra year to really play out. Because think about it from this perspective. You know, he was at Tulsa, right? So Tulsa, not a bad school. It's okay. It's not great by any means, but not a bad school. They're the best team they play in a season may be like Cincinnati, and Cincinnati's, you know, right now playing very well, but for the most part, you know, the best team they may play in a season like that is Cincinnati. Cincinnati might have three kids drafted. Zaven Collins might have played against 10 to 15 players all season that were drafted and playing professional football right now. Whereas you look at a guy like Micah Parsons, who played in the Big Ten, and his 2 years that he played basically played against, you know, three up to 10 draftable players every week, week in, week out. And so it's just, you know, and so unless those guys are completely dominant, it's really hard to look at them and go, oh, they're gonna just come right out and be stars in their career. And Collins, you know, is suffering through that, I think, added lull of playing against now, you know, obviously 20 or 11 NFL players every down. And every down, the guy across from him is faster than he is, you know, is stronger than he is right now. And that's just the adjustment period. And again, he also came from a stupid defensive scheme, a very dumb college defensive scheme, that 3-3-5. That's not an NFL defense. That's not, you know, so he was doing a lot of different stuff. And you look at last year, and this isn't a, you know, again, I'm not trying to take a shot at Tulsa by any means, but you look at Tulsa's record last year, I believe they went 6-2. Their two losses were to the only two good teams that they played, Oklahoma State and Cincinnati. I mean, they beat Central Florida, South Florida, East Carolina, Southern Methodist. Like, when the only teams you're beating are directional schools, those aren't great teams. And so that's what you get And it's not to say he's going to be bad by any means, but what it means is it could take, you know, it could take him 25 games to get up to speed as opposed to, you know, 10 games or like it did Isaiah Simmons, 16 games, right? And Isaiah Simmons played for the best team in college football. So, like, there's an adjustment for rookies, and I think that a lot of times there's an even bigger adjustment for those non-Power 5 small school rookies, especially at linebacker. I mean, linebacker is such an instinctual position, and now all of a sudden, like I said, you're having to take on guys that are, you know, the – like you look at the starting guards for Carolina, they're 6'4", 320 pounds and 6'5", 325 pounds. And by the way, they run like 4.9 40s and Zaven Collins is a 4.6 40 guy. Like that's who he's playing against now, as opposed to, you know, a guy selling car insurance and, you know, a PE teacher right now. Like
right.
That's how it works. And so, again, this is not people think if you are critical that means you don't think they're going to be good. No, it has nothing to do with it. I think Zaven Collins is going to be a fantastic linebacker in the NFL. I think it's going to take him time. He's on pace to play more snaps this year than Isaiah Simmons did last year. I think that's important. And he's on pace to do it, you know, again, using like the PFF grading scale, he's on pace to do it better than Isaiah Simmons did last year. And then we've seen how well Isaiah Simmons has played in year two. So that's the thing, is will we love him to play more? Absolutely. It would be awesome.
And what's hard about it is now we get Cliff said that Tanner's been in the system for the last 3 years. He's earned those reps. They really like him. There's a reason why he was re-signed. They do like him. But when you see him miss tackles, and the same thing with Jordan Hicks, is they have the instinct. They're instinctive enough to read and see what they're supposed to do, but physically don't do it, while Zaven's physicality and his athleticism can sometimes make up for mistakes. But there are times where he's in the wrong spot, which causes a problem for the defense as a whole.
Well, and eyes, you know, you've heard me. I mean, we've talked about this because they've drafted so many linebackers, but we've talked about this before. But I think that's the hardest thing that rookie inside linebackers have to go through. And you know, to that point, think about Micah Parsons in Dallas. And he's playing extremely well, but what has he been playing? What position?
They've been putting him on the edge so he can rush the passer.
Right. So they're easing him into having to use his eyes more and just letting him be the phenomenal athlete he is. And so when you look at it from that perspective, that's, you know, just a similar situation, except they're just keeping him on the field because they don't have as much talent as the Cardinals do on defense.
They don't. They simply don't.
And so that's what it comes down to, is you've got a guy that we all expect. And I mean, the Cardinals do this to themselves too. Let's be completely honest. You can't have the GM come out and say he's the starting linebacker in April when you draft him and then expect fans to be like, well, why isn't Zaven playing?
Tanner Vallejo is playing ahead of, wait, what happened? He's a bust. Yeah.
And the thing that is worse, and I, you know, you and I, we have our opinions on PFF. I think they serve a purpose. I don't have any real big issues with them. But I will say this, and we've talked about it before on the show, their grades are their grades. They are not what the team thinks of a player. And we can tell you that firsthand. We know that the Cardinals and PFF do not grade similarly, because they've had an opinion on, you know, like a guy like Rodney Hudson, who PFF didn't grade extremely highly last year. And they're like, we got one of the three best centers in the NFL. Like,
and even this year, Pro Football Focus, they said he has allowed the fewest pressures of any offensive lineman this year. And yet he's ranked 25th in to overall grade among centers.
Right. So, you know, that's the thing is I think people look at his grade and they go, oh, well, he's got an 80 something. And it's like, why is he not playing? Why would they be playing this bum or Tanner Vallejo who's got a 40 something grade? And it's like, well, I don't think that they're on the same page. But, you know, so it's unfortunate. But, you know, Zavin's the biggest mystery because I think it's the oddity of you've got a guy that's not playing well but still getting all the reps in Marco Wilson, and then a guy that seemingly is playing well and is not getting reps in Zavin Collins. You're like, wait a second, I don't understand. But, you know, it is what it is. And like I said, I think this is the first week that I would complain about it, right? Because because this was the first week that their defense looked like, what the heck were you guys doing? Like, that was the first time we've seen that all season. So
yeah, and Zavin did get a decent amount of playing time in the second half because Vallejo did get hurt. He came out of the locker room at some point. We don't know what the injury is. That was never announced in the press box. Cardinals seem to sneak some of those by sometime. But I saw him come out of the locker room, and then he was testing something, like cutting back and forth on. So I don't know if it was an ankle or soft tissue injury. Well, we'll see what happens on the injury report this week. And Zavin ended up playing nearly as many snaps as Vallejo did. But, yeah.
Well, and the other thing is, you know, this podcast has talked about it, and so we can pat ourselves on the back. And we hate being right about stuff like this, but one of the things that we've said is when you ask Chase Edmonds and Tanner Vallejo to play a lot of snaps, they don't tend to hold up physically.
Yeah.
So.
And I was just – this is completely separate because as we've seen the 49ers suffer another running back injury. That might be exactly why they seem to have a lot of running back injuries, is because they end up using the – they're the quote-unquote lesser talented players, but get success out of them. But these blue-chip guys, if you get now, granted, even the first one, Christian McCaffrey, is missed time. But they seem to, like, those blue-chip guys at the top of the draft tend to get nicked up less for minor things.
Right. And they're just, I mean, they're built differently, too. There's a reason that they're top guys. I mean, there was a reason 2 years ago that I was – you know, people raised an eyebrow at me when I said Jonathan Taylor's one of the five best players in this draft. And I said, if the Cardinals can draft him, I mean, I would have taken him in the first round. I love Isaiah Simmons at 8, or 9, wherever they picked him. But I would have had no problem with Jonathan Taylor there. And can you imagine Jonathan Taylor running next to Kyler Murray? Just how dominant that could be. So
yeah, he's a beast. Yeah. Coming up next on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals stuck on the let's wrap up the show talking about the Seattle Seahawks and the Cardinals week 11 matchup on the road against a team that is reeling at 3-6. That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. The Seattle Seahawks are 3-6. They were shut out against the Packers in Russell Wilson's return from injury. He rehabbed, was it like 20 hours a night, 19 hours a day? He rehabbed that finger.
Probably should have practiced football too.
But he came back and he struggled. Now, granted, we will say Green Bay's defense is legitimately solid. He had 161 yards passing, completed only 50% of his passes, and was held without a touchdown pass for the first time since, I think it was week 6 of last year. Maybe it was week 9, but it's basically for the first time in a year he was held without a touchdown pass. They only have one win in their last 5 games. They picked up the season-opening win. They also have not had consecutive wins all year. That won't happen this week, obviously. And every time they've lost at least twice. So they lost 2 in a row, then they lost 3 in a row, and now they've lost 1. Where are the Seahawks at currently? Because it doesn't seem to make sense. Their defense is an odd juxtaposition because they have a top 10 scoring defense and have the second worst yards allowed, and they don't create turnovers, which is weird.
Yeah, it is odd. And part of it is their offense has been bad this year. I mean, even with Russell Wilson, they've only got three games with Wilson over 20 points right now. Or sorry. Yeah, three games over 20 points. And you know, they had one game or two games. I think Geno was in the game against Pittsburgh, correct?
Well, he was the loss to Pittsburgh. So they got Pittsburgh, New Orleans, and Jacksonville. Yeah.
So they had three games with Russell where they had over 20 points, and two games with Geno Smith with over 20 points. Like, they've just been odd this year. And so they've got a couple impressive defensive games. They had the 13 points to New Orleans in a loss, 7 points to Jacksonville in a win, and then 17 points to Green Bay in a loss. Like, those games are really driving that. You know, their first game of the season, 16 against Indy, and you look at it, they gave up 33 to Tennessee, 30 to Minnesota, 21 in a win over the 49ers, 26 in a loss to the Rams, 23 in an overtime loss to the Steelers, who, you know, aren't very good. You know, so like you said, they're just hit and miss. They give up yardage quite a bit. And that's, you know, that's one of the things. They're 29th in passing yards and 26th in rushing yards. But they do a good job not allowing touchdowns. So that'll be the key thing. And I haven't dug like super deep into this, but I wonder if teams go for it a lot, like in the red zone, and don't get it. And that's why you see their points being so low, because it's odd to be 31st in yards allowed defensively and ninth in points. Like, that's a weird, that's a really weird
stat line.
They don't turn the ball over on offense, so that helps a lot. So they don't have a lot of short fields. They've only thrown four interceptions on the season, even Geno. I mean, so they just don't turn the ball over. But like Jess said, they don't create turnovers either. You know, they've only turned the ball over six times all season. They've only caused nine turnovers all season. It's crazy. Their offense, shortest in terms of average time per possession of drive, shortest in average play per possession, average yard per possession. And then you go to the defense, and they're 32nd. They give up the most time per possession per drive. They give up the most yards per play per drive. They're 30th in yards, like we talked about. But they're 10th in yards or points per drive. Like, their numbers don't make any sense. So it's either going to, like, adjust one way or the other, because how can you be literally bottom two in the NFL in yardage,
but be a top 10 defense in scoring?
That yeah, like work. It just
and
it is.
And be bad at turnover and creating takeaways. That's the thing. That's like, if you can, you're bad at yards, but get takeaways. That's understandable. But they don't create takeaways,
right? And so yeah, it's super baffling to watch. That being said, you know, offensively they've struggled this year, man. Like, they've, and you're seeing that come to the surface. DK Metcalf got kicked out this week. I mean, don't get me wrong, DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett are both on pace for over 1,000 yards. DK has 606 yards, 8 touchdowns. Lockett has 602 yards, 3 touchdowns. They don't have a guy over 200 yards after that. You know, rushing the football, they don't do that well right now. They've had to deal with injuries with Chris Carson. You know, Alex Collins has been okay. And so that's really kind of been an issue for them as well. You look at it, running the football, 345 yards for Alex Collins, 232 yards for Chris Carson. Like, they just, and then again, it falls off a cliff. And so that's one of the big issues, is that they're getting, they're getting production from like the guys that they expected, but they're not getting any secondary production. And then on the defensive side of the ball, one of the things that has just become a situation that doesn't make any sense, because Pete Carroll's still the coach, right? Like, he didn't retire 6 years ago. Like, how is their defense? They just create no pressures. They create no turnovers. Like, the leading sack guy has four. They're pretty low in sacks overall on the season at 15 sacks all season long. They've given up 29, by the way. So, like, it's just crazy to me how this team is built, because you would expect, obviously, Russell missed the three games, I believe it was.
Yes.
And so, you know, that offense struggling a little bit makes sense, but you would expect more. And, you know, they went out and they went out and signed Shane Waldron from the Rams to kind of fix the offense, and it's been middling. So I think this is one of those games where you look at it and you go, man, I hope this is not the game they get right. Because that, exactly. I think that's the concern, is I don't think anybody expects them to play this poorly all year. Now, maybe they do, and maybe it's just, you know, the era, the rain, that it's all over. But I think we've seen enough, you know, you and I have seen enough as Cardinals fans of Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson, and we go, oh, it's not over yet. Like, they're going to make a run. Like, they're going to get on a 6-game win streak here, right? Like, that's what they do all the time. So that's what we're kind of waiting for. That's what we're looking at. But yeah, their season makes no sense. Their best pass rusher is Darrell Taylor. He's played well this year. He was a rookie last year, I believe. First round pick, maybe? Early pick. He's, you know, playing well this year. Leads the team with 4 sacks. They have really limited talent in secondary right now. Part of the reason they give up so many passing yards per game. You know, like I said, 29th, I believe it is, in passing yards. Like, they just give up passing yards. They don't intercept the ball. They don't make plays on the ball. But, yeah, they lock down in the red zone, and they're able to – yeah, there's what I'm looking for. 36 red zone attempts for their opponents, only 17 touchdowns. 21 red zone attempts for the Seahawks. So they don't get to the red zone very often, 15 touchdowns. Wow. Like, that's crazy baffling. They're the number 2 offense in red zone efficiency, red zone touchdown efficiency, and number 5 defense. But they're 30th in third down conversion rates and 32nd in fourth down conversion rates on offense. So that's why they don't get in the red zone very often. But you look at it defensively, they're good on third and fourth down. Third down conversion, they're 8th. Fourth down conversion, they're 9th. So, like, again, it just it doesn't make sense. Like, you have to get at them early and create opportunities for your team, because they're a good third down defense and fourth down defense, and they're phenomenal red zone defense.
And it sounds like that's exactly what the Cardinals have done all year on the road. They're not even good at home this year. They're 1-3 at Lumen Field, which is weird.
Baffling.
That's baffling to see how they've struggled. But divisional matchups are always weird. And so you can count on them being odd, whether this is one of those 6-6 games or whether it's one of those shootout games where it comes down to a kick here or there. Obviously, you know, you look at the matchup on the outside. You look in terms of who you see. Byron Murphy on Tyler Lockett's going to be critical, because, well, Lockett also plays inside, which gives Murphy, so he will see a lot of him. Marco Wilson against DK is going to be important. And Chris Carson might come back. I think he's been designated to return check. I think he's been back at practice. So they designated to him to return back on November 10th. Okay, so maybe this week he comes back. But to have a healthy Chris Carson, because he's a Cardinals problem. He's a Cardinals problem causer. But defense, you know, if the Cardinals get their offensive linemen back, you know, they're not... There's one thing is if you can be on schedule, you're definitely going to be able to move the ball against them. You just got to make sure you stay on schedule. If the Cardinals stay on schedule, their offense is unstoppable, and more so against the team that Seattle struggles if teams are on schedule.
Even against Colt McCoy.
Yeah.
Or with Colt McCoy. Sorry, not against Colt McCoy. But even with Colt McCoy, if they're on schedule, they're tough to stop because they're able to run and or pass on any given situation. It's when you get in, like we talked about to open the show, obvious passing situations where it becomes an issue.
Yeah. How do you see this game playing out? For me, I don't know if we're going to see the boat race we've seen in other times. I'm still on the fence as to whether Kyler's going to play. I think the Cardinals come away with a 25-20 win. Maybe it's not that close, but it might become that close with some, you know, kind of in garbage time. I could also see them blowing them out, but I Seattle's a desperate team right now, and I think the Cardinals need to come out with energy because Seattle's going to come punch in the mouth because they lose this game, it's pretty much done. And that might signal also Russell Wilson might be done in Seattle as well.
Yeah, and I'm going to take the Cardinals with Kyler if he plays 17-13. I think it's a slot fest, like you said. I think it's going to be a low-scoring game. I think the Cardinals pull it out with Colt McCoy. Oh, man, it might be a 14-10 Seahawks type of game. So I think it's going to be low-scoring and ugly, like you said. But we'll see come Sunday.
All right, and with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Secret Podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the way. We will come back and talk next week, unless Seth, you're good for a show next week before we get to Thanksgiving?
Yep, should be good.
Perfect. So we will go into the bye week with one more show, and then after the holiday weekend, we'll come back and for the stretch run of the season. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Rue. This is the Rise Up Secret Podcast. We'll be back again next week. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up C-Red Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, be Red C-Red, and of course, Rise Up C-Red.